What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Kinda Funny Games cast, episode 227. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the Hispanic heartthrob, Andy Cortez.
Good afternoon, everyone. How are we doing?
Andy, where can people keep up with you on Twitch?
Twitch.tv/GaryWitta.
Next to him, best hair in the business, Fran Mirabella the Third. Fran, where can people keep up with you on Twitch?
Same thing, /GaryWitta. He's taking over, man.
Well, he's got a t-shirt press at home. That's pretty easy.
I watched that. He's like showed me up in terms of promotion. So why even bother now?
Yeah,
that's true.
But I'll be working for him soon enough.
That's right, exactly. I am at FM3_ on Twitch if you want to support me.
And rounding out the quartet, the busiest lady in the business who's dressed like a
busiest banana.
Banandria Renee.
That's right. It's Banandria Renee today, Greg.
Andrea, you're, of course, from What's Good Games.
That's
people
correct.
People can find you across the internet working on that.
Yes.
But why are you dressed like a banana today? Yeah.
So, let me stand up so everyone can see the full
banana
suit.
Can your character be that you only speak in rhyme?
Wait, hold on. Here we go.
Yeah.
You got she's doing the peanut butter jelly
dance.
So the reason I'm dressed as a banana, as Banandria Renee today, I also brought my friend Pedro with. Is because I was streaming recently as part of the Guardian Con St. Jude's charity, which Fran and the DCP crew also streamed. And one of my incentive bonuses was if somebody donated $1,500, I would dress in full banana and do the entire show for either Games Daily, Games Cast, or What's Good Games in the banana suit. So one John Drake donated $1,500 to help the sick kids at St. Jude's Research Hospital benefits. And it was very generous and kind of him to do so. And so he selected the Games Cast as the episode that he wanted me to wear full banana suit in.
So
I'm in full banana suit. Banandria Renee is here.
Fantastic.
Very, very proud of you. Yeah, exactly.
Thanks. It's just all for the kids, you know?
That's why you got to watch the show this week. So if you're just listening,
there you go. Now we have a reason to come on over to watch. That's right. You know what I mean? That's the thing.
This is the time.
We know there's more audio listeners. Come on over.
Look at this.
Greg, you ever seen a kid? They're great. Nick Scarpino.
Is that a quote from Nick?
Yeah. Big Beautiful Kids is
you ever
Kevin,
seen a kid?
Right?
They're great. No, that was Nick as well. Yeah, yeah.
You ever seen
big
a kid?
Beautiful Kids. God damn these people.
I wish there was a neck in this, though.
Yeah, it's got to be very uncomfortable.
It's got to be hot, too. It's hot in this room.
Yeah, it's pretty hot. I'm wearing a dress underneath, so lest you think that I'm nude under this.
It looks like it just retains heat like crazy.
That was a $5,000 donation.
Yeah, it's basically just like a foam shell.
Sure.
And when you're standing, it doesn't feel bad on your neck. But when you're sitting, it's just like cutting straight.
Yeah, you're going to be very uncomfortable.
I mean, like
the
joke's
for the
been
kids.
Made, right? Like you could probably just wear the hat the rest of the show if you wanted to.
I don't know, but
what are the kids, dude? It's for the kids.
I think John's going to take his donation back.
Yeah, Andrew, why don't you just peel that off?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Kinda Funny Games cast. Each and every week, four, sometimes three, best friends gather on this table, each coming to talk about the video games they love and appreciate and what's going on and topics of the show and everything you support over at patreon.com/kindafunnygames, because over there, you can give us topics, you can give us questions, you can be part of the show, you can get the show early like we are streaming it right now live, you can get it ad-free on Fridays, you can get it all early. Great, perfect, on Patreon. But if you have no bucks to toss our way, no big deal. You can go to youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, and podcast services around the globe each and every Monday and get the Gamescast there absolutely free with ads. No pre or post show like we're doing here. You would have had a whole riveting conversation about egg sandwiches.
Yeah. There was other stuff. There was wine.
That's all
during
I was paying attention.
My basketball
drinking,
career.
We talked about drinking during shows. You had a basketball?
Yeah,
we talked about the banana song.
There's alcohol.
Andy was
the
drums.
Banana phone song.
Old Town Road. Lots of stuff happened.
Well, let's start this show with housekeeping. Right now, there's a brand new party mode up. It is Apex Legends, and I'm pretty sure Andy hates it because everybody he plays with sucks. Because I wasn't here. Is that right?
You're the
Flapjack wasn't here.
Flapjack wasn't there. Cheeto Fingers and Milk Umami were there, and it was there was a legitimate moment where Kevin's asking me for a lot of things, and he's like, did you ping it? I was like, yeah, I pinged it. I don't see the ping, any, and I just went, son of a bitch! And I was like, oh, and he's like, what? I was like, just look around for Kevin. Like,
the other thing I heard is that he took his machine and went, bah, da, 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 at another enemy and somehow shot all the way around the enemy without ever hitting them.
Yeah. That sounds right.
The final, the final match, we got second place.
Oh, wow. Oh.
I had two kills with like 300 damage or something. Nick had like 140 damage, no kills. Kevin, zero kills, zero damage.
Wow.
Really impressive. Really impressive.
You want to see some esports level Apex Legends, go to youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Subscribe, pick up party mode there.
One second. I forgot that I told the nanobiologist that I would say, look into the camera and say, I'm a
banana. Can we give her, how close is the one on her?
It's
not even worth it.
It's decent.
Okay.
Okay. There we go.
Man, that shot looks right now, so more colorful.
Shut
yeah,
up.
This is very vibrant.
I'm a banana. Or maybe another one. I'm a banana. There you go. You get two reads.
Is this a reference?
No,
no, she's just being
He just, he wrote into the,
you're wrong, right?
You're wrong, and asked if I would do that. And so there you go.
Thank you, Nana.
Do you have to say anything to anybody?
My mom, anything? What's up?
See you soon.
Hold on, do it on the one.
See, I'll see you in Texas in a couple weeks, mom.
No, say hi to your mom. Say hi, like, start it like fresh, you know? One
hey,
clean
mom.
Cut. No, don't do it while I'm talking.
Hey, mom, miss you so much. Miss you, dad, as well. I'll see you guys at RTX. Texas forever.
Nice.
Texas forever. This is what you say to your family.
Fran, do you have any messages to leave?
That's our sign off.
I'm good, man.
All right, cool. Thank you, our Patreon producers, Daniel Massey and James Hastings. Today, we're brought to you by Zebit and Upstart, but we'll tell you about that later. Right now, we're going to start the show with, of course, what is and forever will be what you've been playing. By the way, Tim's just out of the, he's got stuff to do, so he's out. He couldn't do it today. He's very sorry. It was a last minute thing. He loves you all very much. He tells you every show, and I think he says it in a creepy way every time.
Yeah.
Until next time.
I love you.
It's a weird way to end a video game show.
I thought it was a weird way too, but I never said anything.
Just let him do his thing.
He gets real close to the mic and
I love you.
And the funny thing is like he doesn't say he loves you to Gia. He doesn't hug Gia.
He doesn't say I love you when I say I love you on the phone.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You're
big on that too. I'll say I love you and you just walk out of the room.
Really?
Yeah, you hate me.
I think about it.
Oh, okay. Andy.
Yeah, what's up?
Fran. You guys have been playing Bloodstained, Ritual of the Night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Fran, tell me, what are your thoughts here on this Bloodstained?
So I've only played it for, call it a hot minute, it's over an hour, something like that. Got all the way through the first big boss, which from what I can tell is just scraping the surface, because I have seen a lot of gameplay. My brother plays it. It's just over on the left side of my living room.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm seeing like tons of gameplay. But as many of you probably know, it's from Igarashi, right? Was it a Kickstarter project originally?
Yeah.
And it took a while.
A long time.
Delayed, but man, it's really come through. This was the original creator of like what Symphony of the Night,
Castlevania, super famous for.
So one of the mainstays of Castlevania. So long story short, that's what you can expect. It's a Metroidvania. It's really cool. It is very classic, though, I'll say. So you definitely got to be looking for Metroidvania, pulling up your map, going to areas that you haven't explored yet, and you know, from the mechanics side of things, I guess I didn't know what to expect there. And so Andy, you know, you can hop in and tell me what's beyond this, but I hopped in, right, and they just kind of have, like, your kicking.
Sure.
And then that's where you start, because very often in Metroidvania-style games, you start with very little. So that made sense. But then you just start opening up a lot of chests, and I notice you're getting, like, lots of stuff to wear, which increases your defense. And then you're getting, like, a knife, or you're getting a whip, or you're getting a gun even, and you're getting, like, a lot of weapons. So I don't know how far this goes, but I noticed that was, to me, the biggest surprise in the mechanics. I didn't play, there was an original Bloodstained before this, right? Was there one before this?
No, before this.
What was the thing before this then? Exactly.
Before this, Inti Creates put out a 8-bit, like, hey, here's this other, you know.
That's right. It was 8-bit.
Not version of it, but it was in the Bloodstained universe. They were like, we're going to do this in the meantime.
Gotcha. Anyway, going in, I didn't know what to expect was the point, but it seems like you just pick up a lot of chests, equip a different loadout as, you know, your play style. So I really like it. It's all 2D. The style is super vibrant. Another thing that surprised me, I actually don't love the style. I like the characters and stuff. It's very like anime, but it's also just a very like separated, super vibrant Unreal Engine kind of world. So it doesn't look bad or anything. I just thought it was going to be a little more like creepy and more, I don't know, call it stylistic.
Andy, you've played a lot more, right?
Yeah, I'm a little over 13 hours in.
Oh, wow.
I think the map completion, I'm like at 65% map completion or something like that. I'm having a lot of fun with it. I don't think it's a game without fault. I think that like a lot of the maneuvering, it relies on a lot of sort of nostalgic game design, things that I feel like we've evolved past, but it still sort of harkens back to like, I feel like nowadays it's we should have a forward and a back dash on the same button. Right. It's just directional. But in this case, you have a back step, and right. then you have a slide forward. And they are both two separate buttons.
Mm-hmm.
Where
you'd rather it be like a dodge button and you're putting the control on
it. Yeah, and I'm going that way or whatever. But it's really frustrating to be running towards an enemy and you might accidentally face the other way and then you backstep towards the enemy instead of like away from the attack. It's just
even the slide.
It's kind of frustrating, yeah. The slide is like such an afterthought to me. I don't even... most times I forget I even have the damn slide. And those are like some of my main issues with it.
Yeah, it's got like 90s controls. It is a good way
to
put it.
But now is that by design though, right? Like that was Iga's whole thing, remember, when he launched the Kickstarter, was the idea that publishers have told me nobody wants this kind of game anymore, and I'm going to prove them different.
No, and I think that's precisely it. It is for the fans of that Metroidvania style from the 90s with all of his touches, you know. Not that you're wrong about it.
I still think
it
could be modernized, though, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but like, why not have the style of the Metroidvania plus like the art style that embodies or is inspired by the original, but with updated control schemes to accommodate for new inputs that you can get in modern controllers? It just doesn't make sense to me that you would input that just to like keep the legacy alive when clearly there's been so much more innovation and inputs over the last 10
years. I hear you, but I think there's also the argument to be that I'm Iga, I'm Greg Miller, like I'm Greg and I do a podcast a certain way, right? Now granted, I'm not that guy. But like I do have, I mean, whatever. We invented Podcast Beyond, right? I just keep ripping it off and doing it as different shows, right? Like you know what you're getting out of a Greg Miller podcast in the same way you know what you're getting out of an Iga game. It's similar how like Mega Man 11, right? No Inafune, so there's rewind ability. Or no, that was the collection, wasn't it? Was it? I don't forget.
I don't remember.
Was 11.
But I know where you're going.
I still just disagree. I think you can have the content and the creative embodiment of what it was as a classic retro title without necessarily needing to say the inputs, the physical buttons you press with the controller are also retro.
Sure. But it fundamentally changes the gameplay style. I actually agree with Greg's sentiment, which is we would have to ask Igarashi like if that was the goal, but meaning it is not like a high animation, fast action, tons of, you know, it's very much 90s style.
It's about as slow as like a Castlevania game is. I don't have a whole lot of experience with Castlevania games. But I just like it doesn't. It's not the super fast, precise platform or anything like that. The now you can remap buttons and things like that, which is kind of neat. I believe that back step was originally on L1 on PS4, and I mapped it to circle just because I feel like more comfortable with that. But anyway, I don't want to focus too much on that.
But
I think
it sounds like the controls pull you out occasionally.
A little bit. Oh, and oh shit! I ran into an area last night where you are underwater. This game has like 100 demons, I believe.
You said this on Kind of Funny Games Daily, and you're correct that I wanted to say it was actually like 160. Maybe.
Okay, there's a fuckload of demons, and each one of these demons, if you kill them, there are chances that they will drop a shard, and the shard, like,
you
know,
magical
fucking
power
like,
that imbues
impales,
you.
And you're like, and you yell or whatever, and like you are given this power now. Now, if it's a small enemy, it's usually the power is that you can summon them as a helper that will go, give some
like
damage off or whatever.
I got a little 127
demons.
127. Okay, so there's a fuckload of demons, and holy shit.
Which are magical powers.
I swear to Christ, like, some of these demons are just like nouns and adjectives thrown into a randomizer, and they hit randomizer. Like,
so it's
okay,
like Pokemon.
Copper toaster.
Guitar woman. She's in the game. Like, there's a woman with an electric guitar
is
that
there
just
really? I thought you were
shreds.
Rack. That is awesome.
And, like, that creates an... There's a fucking puppy's head. Like, a little, like, kind of labradoodle puppy head kind of... It's really real. It's really off-putting. Anyway, there's a fuckload of... There's a shitload of demons in this game, and each one of them gives you an ability... and you could sort of
and you can equip what a couple at a time or is it just
no you have separate yeah you have separate abilities. So one of them is like your R2 can be an attack. I don't really see how they differentiate what can be on your R2 attack
as
opposed
you can
to
put whatever you want
what can be on your triangle attack, because they are separate. Like, it's almost like having your passive is this and your primary is this and maybe your secondary is this. But I think the powers are really cool. They changed a lot of the way you can play the game. Right now I use this thing called Teps Osius, and it's just like if there's a shitload of like small ads in the room or whatever, I hit R2 and an electrical current kind of zaps all of them at the same time.
Oh, nice.
And you can upgrade those shards as well, and those upgrades come with like, At first, the electrical thing only did three at a time. Now it can go to four. Now it can go to five enemies or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of upgrades. This game's super deep, gameplay-wise.
Yeah, there's a lot of playstyle diversity, it seems, and that's where I didn't
tons
get
to tons of playstyle diversity. I got to a place last night that was very frustrating, though, and hopefully it's one of the only spots that I have to deal with it, but it's underwater, and this whole time I hadn't been able to swim because I hadn't encountered an enemy yet that if you kill it...
You learn how to swim.
If you kill it the first time, something may not ever happen, but if you leave, you come back, you kill it again... Nothing ever happens.
Is this a random chance?
It's random chance, yeah. But odds are you get it fairly quickly. But I ended up killing this little squid last night that gave me the ability to... she essentially like aims her arm in the direction that you push water out, and then you flow through the really frustrating thing about this part of the game, and holy shit, I was not happy with this choice at all, is that suddenly you are asked to... sort of precisely maneuver underwater, but the controls are inverted.
Ooh.
So if I have to aim top left for me to go bottom right.
No, I hate that.
And I'm like pushing myself around, and it's whatever if I'm just like kind of trying to avoid enemies sometimes, because then when you stop pointing and you want to attack the enemy, you start floating up, and that's kind of annoying. But then I got to a part where there are spikes in the water that are like shooting out and attacking me.
You had to dodge them.
And sure, I could be more patient and precise, but I was like, this just doesn't feel good. This is a really bad choice. And that's probably my major gripe. I think the game's super fun, though. It is addicting. You get into that thing where now I have a double jump. Let me go back to all those spots I couldn't double jump. Mm-hmm. Your classic Metroidvania shit. I have a... There's other parts earlier in the game where you kill a boss and you unlock a power to sort of reflect your, like, you shoot a laser out, like,
oh, cool.
Your R2 is like this directional thing where your arm just moves.
You use the R analog stick to actually aim your arm at a power. Like, you could, for example, have a firepower, you light a fuse on a cannon with it, or you aim your arm at a door to open it to
do
something.
You shoot like a water power or whatever the fuck. But one of them is a reflect array where you... It shows like a guiding laser, and if it hits the ceiling and then the ground, there are spaces you couldn't go through before, but now you can then reflect into there.
New areas.
I think it's a lot of fun. I do think the game's kind of ugly in a lot of parts.
Yeah, the art style is a little weird, huh? That's what
I'm saying. And it's not a lot of people in my chat were asking me, like, do you think it's just the 2.5D? I don't think it's 2.5D. I think it's fine that it's 2.5D. I don't have
problems
with
that. That was the big thing.
That
was one of the big things about it coming out, right? Where I'm not coming out. I mean, the announcement that Ego wanted, if I remember this correctly, to make it look more like Castlevania, obviously, with like the 3D character model, or you know what I mean, the model doesn't look there. But he was like, it's just too expensive to do
it
that way. So it's easier to do this, and this is how it's going to be.
You create a model and you animate it from there, as opposed to animating frame by frame by frame.
Yeah,
like
that's what I meant.
It's
you.
Obviously a lot more efficient, but I don't have a problem with the fact that it's 2.5D. I just think a lot of the background art, there's some moments where you're walking and there's a castle in the background, kind of like you're very prototypical. You see the castle with the moon or whatever the fuck.
You can go there.
But it's like, add some depth of field or something. Yeah. Like, this looks like a really low poly model in the background. There's a lot of background areas and just environment art in general that don't look good. I think the lighting's really bizarre.
Yeah.
There's a lot, like... I think of a game like Hollow Knight that has such beautiful
it's a very clean,
sort of mood lighting, and some parts are darker, and that's fine, but I feel like this game felt the need to just be bright everywhere.
It's very clean and vibrant all around, exactly.
It's a little too clean and vibrant.
And when I glance at it, it reminds me a lot, and I started it, played for 2 seconds because I was testing something, so I haven't got it, and then I was waiting for the Switch version, which I installed, but then Switch has got all these problems with loading and whatever.
Yeah,
I
digress on all that. There are Switch performance issues.
Glancing at it, the art style has always reminded me, and stick with me, Way Forward, Shantae, like, you know, like that animated cartoon thing, right? But in that, it works regardless for either game, but like, Shantae always was like, it's a cartoon. That's how it should look. Like, you know what I mean? Whereas this one, it always has been this juxtaposition of, it's clearly trying to be a modern Castlevania and have that aesthetic to it.
Yeah.
But then it looks more like that. And I was like, that's an interesting mix.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, for a game called Bloodstained, and it's not based on anything, is it?
No.
Yeah, so for something called...
BTW, everybody, we heard you last week. We're aware Cyberpunk 2077 is based on Cyberpunk.
Yes, pen and paper game. Right. Directions. But meaning for something called Bloodstained, it does not look how you'd think. Yeah, it's very clean, shiny, vibrant, and also on the 2.5D comment, just so people fully understand, the rendering, everything's in 3D, but it's 2D left or right gameplay style. But just in case they thought it was like Super Mario 3D world, you know, which sometimes people think of as the 2.5, but anyway. But I do like it. Yeah,
I think the game is really, really good though.
If you're looking,
at its core.
Yeah, if you're looking for that style of gameplay, and especially someone who has a mastery of designing games like that, I think that's what it overall delivers on. But it, like you said, it's not without fault. And I've only played, you know, for an hour, but some things do feel a bit too archaic at times. But the amount of playstyle that did surprise me. I was like, holy cow, you can equip at any time so many different things. In the middle of combat, too. You're like, you're using a whip, you're like, I'll stop. I'm going to use this giant claymore. I'll stop. I'll use this. And also the magic replenishes really fast, I notice.
Yeah.
And that, they're encouraging to use your powers a lot, which I actually really liked. I thought it was going to be, that I thought might be more old school, where you barely ever get to use it.
No, yeah.
And it's not it's that. It's pretty very, often. Yeah, very forward. So I think if you're looking for that type of game, you're going to like it, but it's probably in that 7 to 8, 5 range. Like, I don't know without playing it, but... You really need to be looking for that.
Here are my two questions. I think one for just Andy and then one for the entire table. Andy, for you, why this? Are you surprised you like this? You don't have an experience with Castlevania before, you were saying?
I mean, it was a game that I rented a couple times. It wasn't anything that I ever like sat down and wanted. It wasn't like my Mega Man back in the day, you know? I know that I love Metroidvanias.
Okay.
And so I was like, sure, I'll play the...
Are you surprised this one clicked?
Yeah, okay. Actually I am. Yeah. I do think the design is, you know, very smart. I do feel though, however, like playing Axiom Verge several years ago, where Axiom Verge, I think was an evolved version of the classic Metroidvania, where you go back to certain areas and now these enemies can be affected by this other power you have that wasn't available before. I feel like there's not any of that yet.
Mm, okay.
Where everything is still, you hit the thing and it dies. But I do remember moments in Axiom Verge being like, holy shit, that's smart. I haven't really had a whole lot of moments like that yet in Bloodstained yet.
It's mostly like level accessibility.
It's mostly level accessibility.
And puzzle solving. Yeah. It's not enemies that you couldn't like.
Correct, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
And then the question for the table, Andrea Renee, we'll start with you. Are you surprised this game's good and is being critically well received?
No, I'm not. I'm not surprised that it's good and that it's being well received. I think a game like this is set up for success because video game media loves classic retro inspired things.
Sure.
Especially something as classic as a Castlevania game, right? So I think I'm really excited to hear that it's good because I feel like we've seen some of these Kickstarter games.
Mighty Number 9.
Right. Mighty Number 9 is the unfortunate poster child for something that people had a lot of high hopes for really reinvigorating a classic style from a gigantic creator that just really fell on its face. And thankfully, this hasn't. Obviously, there's having a couple hiccups at launch, like almost every video game does.
Sure. And like we were talking about it yesterday, the hiccup being Switch, right? Like, it's got all these loading problems.
Mm-hmm. And that game-breaking bug right when it launched.
Well, the input delay is also...
I didn't hear about this.
Yeah, the input delay... Jeff Grubb
fucking sucks.
Jeff Grubb...
Switch?
Jeff Grubb showed that on... They were testing out between PC and Switch that Switch has 3 times the input delay, where like it shows in slow mo the button being pushed and then the PC character jumps and the Switch character's
that
like way later.
Oh yeah, I saw that video going around too. Yeah. I mean, that to me is something that's fixable, right?
I hope so.
But I think what I'm glad to hear is that Bloodstained doesn't have like overarching gameplay design flaws that make the game itself broken that you can't fix it. Like some of the issues that Greg and I had with Days Gone, for example, weren't about input controls or lag or a bug. They were about like design choices overall in the game that we just weren't fans of. And it sounds like Bloodstained doesn't have that, which is a good thing.
I think it's really good. I was going to mention something about about the game release.
Think about it, because my thing, the question stems from, I am surprised that it turned out
me
good.
Me too, because of Mighty No. 9.
Yeah, Mighty No. 9 part of it, but also just the fact that, and this is, again, this isn't my kind of game. I like a Metroidvania occasionally, but it's rare. Thank you.
Metroid's my favorite franchise, that's why I said that.
I know, and they're just not good usually. No. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't play Metroid games setting, or Castlevania games, really Metroidvania games.
Anyway, it was the idea that, yeah, I mean, I remember like it being a huge deal when Iga came to the original Kind of Funny spare bedroom, right? In 2015, and like Colin got to talk to him and all this stuff. And
very normal, and casual Aaron from dude, Game by Grumps. Way, right?
Huh?
Aaron from Game Grumps was there too. I remember that video.
No, that's not right.
Did he bring his hat and everything?
Here's what I was going to mention.
I still wasn't done.
Oh, sorry. Go.
And then it was the fact that it's just been going on so long. And I was confused as well when Inti Creates put out the 8-bit one. I was like, wait, what's going on? And I remember Jared being all excited about it. And then I felt like literally I was having a conversation with somebody. I guess this just came out this week or last week. This week, right? This week on Switch.
It was last week.
Last week for anything else. And so it was at E3 where I was having a conversation, maybe with Easy Allies, I think. And they mentioned, oh, yeah, blah, blah, and it's out. And I was like, it's out next week?
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything about this. Like, that doesn't sound like it's going to actually line up the way it should.
Yeah, because we're used to when it's like radio silence.
Yeah, that's bad that time.
Probably, you know, might be mixed reception or just bad.
What did you remember?
It does show you, though, that the, like, again, this game can be kind of unoptimized where I'm running on a PS4 Pro and there are still moments every once in a while where I kill an enemy and boom, freeze frame. And then the animation happens. Like, there are like kind of some massive frame drops here and there. Nothing game breaking, but
that's surprising to me given the really not super graphical intense style of this game.
And I think that's just mostly because it's a smaller studio working on an indie game where there's tons of times where we play a very small indie game on party mode. It's like, this was made in Unity or whatever by five people, and we're still having frame rate issues, not because it's like graphically, you know, insane or whatever. It's just not very optimized. Yeah.
Worth pointing out in this same vein, too. You can, if you have Bloodstained at home, and when you start a new game, put Team Fat in all caps, one word, and you'll unlock the Kind of Funny logo to play as,
as
a character's face.
Awesome.
That what I was testing, and I haven't promoted it because it almost gave me like a seizure. Like it's like, like when you go into cutscenes, it flashes. And Jen was like, "What the fuck is going on?" I'm like, "I don't know." So I wrote an email. I don't know if it's been fixed. You had something else to say there?
The real crying shame about this is, so this is personal to me, I guess, but I play games when I'm in a mood. In other words, there's certain games that I really want to play on Switch when I'm on a plane.
Sure.
That's just the way that gaming has evolved for me. And unfortunately, I spend most of my time in front of my PC streaming, playing games there. What a nerd. Grinding out games like Destiny, Division 2, anything in that world. I also like highly cinematic games like Last of Us, Days Gone, God of War, all that stuff. So anyway, my point is, this game is perfect for Switch. Yeah. It is like, in my opinion, it is exactly what I want. I'm a huge fan of Super Metroid and Metroid and Castlevania, Symphony of the Night, all of that. And so I would love to bring this on a plane. So when I heard that it does not perform well, one, that's why I was like, well, I'll just play it on PC because I want the best experience.
Yeah.
But if they fix it up on Switch and you have a Switch, I think it's going to be a top game this year when you really like look. I mean, granted, there's a ton of games. I have to think about it. But I feel like it's going to fit into a category of like, you should get this on Switch.
And it's one of those two, like, Gary and I talked about on Games Daily this week. I think it's telling that they want to fix these problems, the fact that they had a statement out the day after the Switch was released. I'm just like, hey, we hear you, we see you, we're not going to wait for a giant patch, we're going to do a bunch of little ones, we're working on it. Now, granted, they've been working on the game, clearly they knew something was wrong, blah, blah, blah. I don't know how much rope you want to give them, but
risky.
It was at least they're communicating, which so many people are terrible at doing these days.
Yeah. But anyway, I don't know if that makes sense, but I feel like on that platform, it would give me a lot more joy because I'm playing it in like 20-minute stints, 40-minute stints, and flying, who knows. And I think it's great for that. But in front of my PC, I'll be honest, I was like playing it for a while, and I was like, yeah, I was like, I like this, but it's very archaic. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. I love those types of games, but I can't play them in my PC or even in my living room, I don't think. Like, I'd just rather play Apex.
No autosave. You have to run into the rooms to save the game.
Yeah, very true.
And no, thanks.
You're punished.
I'll tell you one thing I really don't like is that and this is clearly just a design choice where they could have done it a certain way that I would have preferred, where there are save rooms and there are fast travel rooms.
Yeah.
They are not one and the same. And I think that's really dumb. Like the fact that
they have fast travel rooms?
Yeah. Oh. You can find a separate fast travel room. But if I get to a spot and I save it, It's like, fuck, I have to go back up there.
Classic games.
It's
classic. You wanted it and you got
it. Unless there's a fast travel, maybe there's one in the room kind of near me, but that's the closest one I know of. I don't want to risk going that way. Let me go all the way back to, if you die, fuck it, you're back to your save room or whatever. But I really think that those should have been one and the same. Just, you know.
You should save more, Forehead.
I do.
You got it. It's true that it teaches
Wait,
you really
what
fast.
Did you
you're
say?
Like, sorry, it's a Twitch thing.
It's a Twitch thing.
Get it.
Yeah.
It's an emote forehead. Like, Monkas, duh, I should have done that.
Monkas. Dude.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But anyway, it is very classic,
kids,
like you said.
These kids, these Gary Winnes running around, streaming up a storm. Nobody
oh, dude, I didn't watch Games Daily, but I was watching Gary's stream, and he was like, yeah, Greg Miller got me good when he was like, so Gary's streaming. And speaking of another senior citizen that's streaming, Bernie Sanders. <is what? laughs> Oh, that's a good one.
Ouch.
You, Gary fuck, sucks. You got his bitch ass.
Andy. Not What's only up? Are you playing this classic, you know, inspired classic game, Bloodstained, you're also playing the brand new Outer Wilds.
Yeah, I beat Outer Wilds kind of around when we started getting going with E3, so it kind of just got lost in the shuffle, I feel. But I played and beat Outer Wilds over maybe a week or something like that. A couple hours here and there.
Do you feel it deserves, it's deserved all the praise it's getting?
It is one of, it is...
Yeah, I've been wanting to play
it's
this.
Probably my game of the year.
Wow. Really?
At first I kept thinking Apex is my game of the year, similar to how like when Overwatch was out that year, that was my game that I just could not put down, and I felt the same way about Apex. But I think Outer Wilds is my game of the year right now. It is so challenging. It does not hold your hand at all.
Yeah.
You're going to work for a lot of these puzzles where it's context clues. There's a moment where there's a moment where you have to, there's sand being pulled from your planet to another planet, and if you get caught in the sand vortex, you shoot up. But you notice on the ground where the sand moves over, there's a guy on the ground, and he hasn't been shot up by the sand. So what's going on here? Oh, he's underneath the bridge. If I stand underneath the bridge, I won't get sucked up. That means that I can do this. It's like
that's
so.
Cool.
It reminds me of when people played The Witness and they were all up on that. Like it is problem solving. But tied with this fantastic narrative that you can kind of discover as you play, you're not going to play it kind of in the same order that anybody else would. You are discovering this mystery about the universe and its demise and its past. But the feelings that I had watching Interstellar in a movie theater,
you're getting with this game.
A million times. I've had this feeling in this game. I forgot who I was talking to. I think it might have been Gary Whitta where I was like, no, it was Danny O'Dwyer. I was like, I have felt every emotion playing this game and at times all of them at the same time. Like, I'm scared, but I'm excited and I'm like, there's my tears in my eyes. Like, this game's fucking incredible, dude.
So not to interrupt, but to maybe give people some context for what The Outer Wilds is for people who are like, I don't know. That's that game that Obsidian's making, right?
That's Outer Worlds.
Yeah, so unfortunately they're both releasing in the same year. But so people understand, how would you describe what the game of The Outer Wilds is?
The game of Outer Wilds is it's on Game Pass now. So if you have Game Pass, it's free on Game Pass if you already are a subscriber or whatever. Outer Wilds is very much like a Groundhog Day game where at a certain time period, you'll start at the beginning and you have to keep on discovering. It's a space exploration, sort of a sci-fi narrative, but it's not, a lot of people immediately think it's like No Man's Sky, where it's like millions of planets.
Right.
It's not procedurally generated.
No. This is you're in a contained solar system with, I think, like 8 or 9 planets or something like that. And you are this sort of spacefaring race of creatures that are on, you're not human, you're just kind of on this planet with a bunch of other like kind of cartoony looking aliens. And you are going to go explore space. And there are other astronauts just like you who have already gone out. And you have to kind of seek them out, find out what they've figured out, and learn as you go. And it is, again, it is not a game that handholds. You're not going to get fucking waypoints telling you where to go. The clues are all things that you just read in the world. You're essentially you're learning about the prior race before you that kind of laid this foundation. This was like several hundred thousand years ago, I believe, or 50,000 years ago or something.
Because like most video games, you start this one, no one's 100% sure what's going on, yep. and you're special, right? I've played through the intro a couple times. And you walk, like when you leave, you know, you're getting ready to take off, you have to do these little things before you can. And on your way back to your spaceship, right, there's like a sacred statue, monument yeah. that speaks to you. And then you turn to the other people, like, did you see that? And like, no one's ever been spoken
to. Yeah, they're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And so... as you are sort of discovering how that happened to you and why that happened to you, you are also learning about your solar system that you live in and the people that were there before you, the explorers that were there before you, their technology, what they're working on. It's so fascinating. I can't recommend this game more. I think
it's all first person.
It's all first person. Yeah. I think a lot of people I've noticed.
And you can roast marshmallows.
You can roast marshmallows, yeah. And people have kind of like told me that they were put off by the flight controls. I had problems with the flight controls like fairly just in the beginning. I didn't really continue to have those issues.
Sounds like it's complex
enough to get a
word.
I didn't enjoy the flight controls when I played. But I think that's one thing that you just have to spend time practicing.
Yeah, you just
like
get
any
used to
new
it.
Traversal mechanic in a game that's different, mm-hmm. you know, you just got to practice.
That's been my experience with it, is that Judges Week last year we played it. Then there was when I went to do Sayonara Wild Hearts around GDC time, they had it and I played it again. And both those times that it was just from the start, like, go ahead and play. And the intro did not click for me. And so when it actually launched, I was like, I got to try this. I have Game Pass. Booted it up, turned it on, jumped in, and didn't get much further. It was like, all right, cool, I'm off the planet, I'm going, I've landed on this one planet, it's pretty much all water, I bumped into something, my thruster, I'm in the water, I couldn't get out, I was like, all right, well, this isn't, and like you're saying, there's no hand-holding, and like you were saying a second ago about like what mood you need to be in, Fran, like, I was like, I am not in
this mood. Not in mood. That mood right now.
I am not in the mood to like get my teeth kicked in until I figure out how to do this.
It's like, I hate to put people off on this game, but it's sort of like recommending somebody watch a 12-hour documentary on JFK or something, where it's like you're not just gonna sit down and experience a super fast episode of The Office that's like bang bang bang,
right,
comedy
you in, and
it's something you have to sit down and experience and immerse yourself. Like, it's the type of game that when I beat it, I immediately went to the subreddit and just read on everything I could, and I just wanted to learn more, and if there's stuff I missed. There's a bunch of different endings.
She's saying I should just read the subreddit. Got it.
No. Because the feelings you get from not only what's happening in the game, but paired with the soundtrack. The soundtrack is available on Spotify. It is fucking great.
Hans Zimmer did it?
It feels like it. Because there's there's a lot of those moments where you have these sort of powerful things that are happening on screen.
And they really amplify the
organs are... Nice. And it's beautiful, dude.
Sounds like they caught some inspiration then from Interstellar. Like,
I got
right?
all of those vibes where you're watching Interstellar and everything's super loud and you're scared. But
Andrew Prawler,
Contact, by the way, the
is
original
the composer.
I tweeted him and I was like, "You made one of my favorite soundtracks ever. Thank you for this." Yeah,
he's like, "I love Party Mode."
So at one point, you were in tears and you said, "They should have sent a poet." It's a Contact reference.
Oh, Contact. Yeah, Contact's good.
Gotta watch Contact. It's got some like really cheesy but awesome moments.
Contact's a great movie.
Anyway, Outer Wilds, I cannot recommend it more. Please play it. It started off as a student project in 2013 or something like that. And then it just, you know, enough people liked it to where I guess Microsoft or whoever, you know, published it and built a team around them. And
Annapurna.
There you go. Yeah.
I think I might be checking this out on Fran Friday.
Oh, Fran Friday!
I always look for something new to play, and like it's been sitting in my Epic Store as well. Talk about a double promotion! But it's been in the Epic Store, and I've been wanting to play it, I have access to it now.
An open world mystery game about a solar system trapped in an endless time loop.
Yeah,
because you have a set amount of time, and then you go back to the beginning. You have to do everything
over
again.
Sounds like Majora's
Mask.
It's very similar to like that.
On that timer.
You start hearing the music pop up.
Really?
And you're like, oh shit! I have to fucking.
Time.
I have to finish
how much time do you have?
22 minutes.
It does none of the stuff you do carries over.
I got to check this out.
Like if. Well,
but you're building things in the world or changing things in the world. That
no,
are
you are just you are learning.
You're
and
learning. Yeah.
You are sort of collecting knowledge.
Yeah. So your character remembers.
You go back to your
it's like
ship.
Happy Death Day or Happy Death Day to you.
Sure.
Where you remember everything when you restart.
Yeah.
The day.
You have this sort of clue thing on your ship that looks like it kind of just looks like, you know, there's information here and it's all tied together and eventually it all starts tying. And it's so
how many hours would you estimate it might be?
I'd say maybe close to 20 or 15.
Okay. So it's not like a 60 hour.
I mean, maybe not even that. Maybe not even that long. That's the thing. There's so many. You can forego a lot of things in this game and maybe fast track it. I don't know how long that would take if that's possible. But the game is so weird because you're not exploring it the same way. You're not learning this knowledge the same way that anybody else is playing it is learning it. It's if I go to this planet first, I'm going to learn stuff there that you might not know because you went to that place first and shit like that. And you're kind of piecing this puzzle together.
Cool.
That's awesome.
It's incredible, dude.
Yeah. Speaking of incredible things, ladies and gentlemen, I had a dream come true where we travel a lot, Fran, as you know. Mm-hmm. Not you so much anymore. You're part of your PC being a huge dork.
Sometimes.
Me and Andrea travel a lot. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's true.
You're going to Texas.
You're getting ostracized here.
Yeah, you are. Not. I won't turn around on you. But I was having a conversation with Tim the other day on our trip back from E3, right? And I was just like, man, it just sucks right now. And I was holding my Switch of like, I have so many games on the Switch, but none of them are what I want right now. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about moods, right? Where I kept talking about, I want Ultimate Alliance right now. I just want to run around and smash the hell out of stuff. I don't have Ultimate Alliance. That's not where the story's going. But I was looking for something to kind of be obsessed with on the Switch, right? And it happened not once, but twice, Andy. Since I guess last Gamescast, really, where we got a million press releases, as everybody knows. One of them that dropped in my inbox the other day was for Dandy Dungeon. Have you heard of Dandy Dungeon?
Never heard of it.
It was a goofy enough name, right, where I was like, what the hell is Dandy Dungeon? And I scrolled down. This is what sold me on it. Dandy Dungeon is a story-driven romantic comedy roguelite RPG, which fuses retro visuals with modern ideas and features an amazing soundtrack, which layers together chip tunes and the humming of the main character himself. Loot procedurally generated dungeons, transform your weapons into legendary blades, collect dandy armor sets, and catalog monsters in your quest for love.
This is a solid description.
And I was like, immediately reply, yeah, I'd like a code for this. And I got it, totally expecting. I get codes for a whole bunch of stuff on Switch that I pop in, I play for a while. I'm like, okay, cool. I can talk about Gamescast, or this isn't for me, and I know I move on to the next thing. Jumped into this one, and then immediately just started checking all the boxes of what I want at this moment, right? Where it is, the idea here is that you are, the full title, right? I don't have it. I pull it over here. It's Dandy Dungeon, Legend of Brave Yamada. And the idea is that you are Yamada-san. You are a Japanese programmer. You are 36.
That font looks real familiar.
You live alone. Yeah, right? Yeah, and like, he looks a lot like Mario as a character, too. You live alone, and you program at the, like, basically their Nintendo, the biggest thing, right? And you decide, he decides he wants to start making his own game, right? And so he starts just working on it on his computer, and then you go in and play test the levels, right?
Oh,
and you
cute.
Go in and you debug the system, cool. And this whole thing starts to evolve. You know, cute girl moves in next door, so he's like, he falls in love with her. He puts her in the game as the princess. Now the game changes from just going through the dungeons and getting
really
loot
cool.
to trying to save the princess, right? And like, then, you know, this all happens very early, and it's not a story-driven game. The CEO of the publisher comes in and is just like, you're not coming to work anymore. You're fired, right? So now he's the evil guy in the game. And your mom's so proud of you that she's sending you new mini levels to play to put into your thing and do this. But what gets crazy about it, right, is that
her husband comes and kills you.
Kills you. No, is that the gameplay isn't turn-based. It isn't an action strategy or anything like that. It's you go into it. I should point out that this is new to Switch as of today, as of the recording. However, it was a mobile game, so it's got that vertical thing, layout. Now they've put a whole bunch of stuff on the sides of it. But what happens is the gameplay of playing through the dungeons isn't going in and fighting them, like with making those choices. It's tracing lines on the map, like it's a tiled squares. I'm sure Andrea's seeing right now. And you trace your path from the start of it. Barrett, if you want to bring it up, Dandy Dungeon. You trace your path from the start to the goal. And the idea is that you want to touch every one of the tiles to get a bonus and get more gold to come out of.
Yeah, that'll be better.
But you can also skip it. But then you every empty square you leave open gives you a hit point. Or takes away a hit point, I should say. You get damaged. So as you go through and start doing this, it'll say,
if you scroll down, there's a video.
There's five.
I had to work on other stuff.
There's five stages, five levels to a stage, right? So you have to get clear through them. As Yamada-san, the character is going, the video game character is going and runs into enemies, he'll start attacking them. You don't choose the attacks. You see it going on there. You'll have unlocked special abilities. You'll have on a little thing that you can deploy. You can deploy a heal. You can deploy a fireball. You can do all these different things. However, it is about number one, a maze. There's a timer. There's penalties if you take too long. But then it is monitoring him on his path of, oh, I didn't see this guy, and he's shooting me from a few tiles away. I need to watch my health, or I need to make a move beforehand. Like, it's way more complex than I think I initially thought it was going to be, and it's what keeps me coming back to it throughout this Quebec trip of, like, this is so weird. Like they talk about him humming over the chiptunes, like, when you do it, it's like the chiptune-y background, but it is him going da 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 da. You know what I mean? Like he's, it's this That's really cool. interesting,
well, look at the boss.
Bizarre, like absurd
yeah.
game.
Yeah, I was looking at it, and it looks like the so is it always in dungeons?
Yeah,
yeah. So it looks like it's actually so the character and stuff's almost like Mario-esque, like you work in Nintendo, but you're Mario. Yeah. But the game and the font, right, is like Dragon Warrior, Dragon Quest.
Yeah,
stuff.
Dragon Quest. That, yeah, exactly. Dandy Dungeon looks exactly like
it's
that.
It's got slimes and stuff. So it seems like that's the inspiration for the dungeon.
And so as you see here, like this is where the roguelite stuff comes in. Mm. As you go start through, you start, if you clear the level, you bring your treasure back out. You can go back in and replay for bonuses and stars to get more stuff. But you bring the gear sets out, and then you can level them up with your gold. You can take other stuff and infuse them in to make the thing stronger. The chef outfit comes with a different bonus than, say, the, I think it's a chauffeur outfit with his little, it's super weird, and it looks goofy, cool, and it's style. So much fun. It's just a cool idea. And at first, when I booted up, it was like, oh, I didn't realize it's a one cell phone game. You know what I mean? Yeah, but then playing it, it's so much deeper than I gave it credit for. And if Per Schneider is playing it as well, I see him on the leaderboards. I see him on the leaderboards. So yeah.
Oh, I saw you tweeted him about this.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, Dandy Dungeon, Legend of Brave Yamada, now on Switch. Again, that's already out on phones, I guess.
Awesome.
Totally gets a seal of approval. A lot of fun. Really enjoyed what I'm playing of it. And I was going ham on it, having a great time in Quebec. That was the game I was playing down there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Having a good time. Then I went to the kind of funny subreddit, Fran.
Oh.
And I saw a lot of
people. Are you going to say we're doing a new thing?
Huh? Yeah. Do you have more questions about Brave New Yamada? Oh, please do.
That.
Oh, my God, please.
It was just a very fast and notable point that we don't really cover mobile. It's hard to tackle, and I'm on a thread with all these ex-Apple guys and, you know.
I know those clowns,
And dude, I can't tell you how much, like, for all we know, the commentary I usually hear is, yeah, that game's 2 years old, there's literally 100,000 other games that are better than that you should play right now on mobile.
Sure.
So I think, like, it's a good reminder that you're liking this game. Where were we when this came out? Why didn't we just play it on our phone? Like, it's still this mood and this gap of us that we have to bridge. I know this, and I'm like, I don't have time. I feel like I don't have time for it on my phone. You know what I mean?
I love this discussion. No, totally. I'm with you that I know there's so many amazing games on mobile devices. But again, for me, it's the buttons and the tactile nature of a Switch, of a controller.
I prefer it too.
What you're talking about is 100% true of discovery. Like, and don't get me wrong, those sites exist. Those resources and podcasts exist.
Yeah.
But I have more games than I'll ever play right now. Only worried about three consoles, let alone PC, let alone mobile. Yeah. VR, I'm not even counting.
I think you nailed it with the, we've tried. We've obviously played mobile games. Like, we prefer the tactile input of see, I use the term like real, and I'm telling you, I'm on the thread with these guys, and they'll be like, oh yeah, you're like a baby. This is what everybody's playing now on touch, you know, use your touch screen. You don't need buttons, but I prefer that style, and it just is, it's the mood and the feel of it.
And that was the thing, like, for the record with Brave Yamada here, Dandy Dungeon, I played on the flight and then for a while at Jen's parents, and it must have been 3 hours in.
You played 3 hours straight of this game?
Oh, well, no, I mean over a couple days.
Oh, gotcha.
But it must have been 3 hours in before I was like, wait, and I started tracing the line on the screen with my finger. And I was like,
you realize you could just use your touch screen.
This is clearly how it was designed. I'm navigating so much faster than moving like the Final Fantasy white gloved hand around and sticking. And I was like,
demonstrates the exact problem we have. I'll tell you why I also just can't play on mobile. And like, I don't really have a tablet that I use. There's so much other distraction. Like, I'm getting a text message.
Sure.
I'm so trained to like check Twitter every like 5
minutes.
I'm on my phone, I'm just going to cancel the game for like a minute. And I'm like, it's a terrible experience for
me. We just did a PlayStation VR show today. Remember, patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. You can watch Kevin and I record them live before months from now when they're out on YouTube.
Yeah.
The thing about I love about VR, I think, speaks to playing Switch on a plane. It is the idea that with VR, zoom, and I'm in that world. And
immersed.
I can't look at my phone. I can't do this thing. I can't worry about anything else. In the same way, when I'm on a plane, right, and the Switch is on, cool. I don't have that distraction of what's going on my phone.
You can't go walk porty.
Yeah, exactly, right? You get to, I mean, I remember when the Switch came out, and then Zelda obviously came out, and then what, it was like later that week or two weeks later, we went to PAX, and it was a cross-country flight, and like that, I'll never forget landing in Boston and being like, that felt like it was an hour. I played Zelda the entire way, right? I played Breath of the Wild the entire way.
You didn't want to put
it down, I bet. And it was like, exactly. It was like the time just woof, was gone.
Yep.
That's such an awesome experience.
Yep.
Similar to the game I want to talk about now, which, again, I was so happy to have Yamada's story happening. And I was like, good, a Switch game that I'm all invested on. This is cool. But I still find I could put it down every so often. You know what I mean? Mobile games, mobile tendency
style
maybe.
Mobile games, yeah.
I went to the subreddit while I was in Quebec and found Katie from Greg's Comic Book Club. You all know her well, I'm sure. She had posted over there, Moonlighter, a Greg Miller-ask roguelike on Switch. Can anyone remember if any of the guys tried or talked about a game, Moonlighter, when it came out a year ago? Just started on Game Pass, but it's also on PlayStation 4 and Switch. I was like, I never heard of this. I read her description. I went and got it. And do you want to talk about how much I Yamada, great. This is a game, like, literally, I came in from playing it on the flight home, walked in, put it in the dock,
really?
Grabbed the controller, and kept playing it there.
Couldn't peel yourself away.
Again, Fran Mirabella.
Beautiful art style.
I'm pitching it to you. Yeah, exactly. The idea here is that, don't play anything yet, though. Let me explain it for you.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea here, right, is that it's another roguelite. It's action RPG. This time you are actually making the decisions, right? But you go into procedurally generated dungeons at night. You go in there, you fight the slimes, the things that shoot you. You'll see in a second. Yeah, okay.
Like I really liked Hades as an example.
It's like that. Yeah, you nailed it.
Top down.
Exactly. So you go in there, you beat these guys up, you fill your inventory with stuff, and then you get out, or you push further, like a Spelunky or any other dungeon crawler, rogue, whatever you want to say. You come back out to the village, right? You go back to your house, and then a new day begins. It's daytime, and then Fran, you sell the stuff you earned in the dungeon. Because who you are in this game isn't the adventurer. You are the merchant in town who moonlights as an adventurer.
Oh, that's cool.
And so you come back in here, and the dates, like the combat is fun. It's all that different jazz you'd expect from that kind of gameplay. You come back in, and then you do a business simulator where you go and you take your items. And like what I'm doing right now is I'm building towards specific gear sets, right? So I've wishlist everything I need. You wishlist the thing, then my inventory shows if I actually need it for what I'm working on. So when I come back out of a dungeon, I have all the stuff that I don't need for the projects I'm working on. And so I know I'm going to sell all of that. I put it on the table. I set the prices. Then people come
for the
in.
People in town?
People
really?
Come in. They look at it. And this like emoticon comes up over their head of like dot, dot, dot. Then it's either a smiley face. They like it. They'll buy it. This begrudging smiley face where it's like, it's a little too much, but I'll pay for it. A frowny face. They won't pay for it. And then there's one of the other side of the spectrum that's gold for eyes. It's like, this guy's an idiot and he's selling it way too cheap.
Oh, yeah.
And so you start playing this business sim now of, oh, man, I didn't know what that was. And I sold it way too cheap. So if 100's too cheap, is 500, you start playing with
the
economy.
You're pricing the market.
And then it shows the popularity of the item. You can flood the market with too much of the stuff. So then your prices go down and they don't care as much. Then you're earning this money that you then take back out. You can upgrade the town, bring in a blacksmith, bring in a guy who, you don't want to find random stuff? Like, I'll sell specific stuff. Then it's, you can upgrade your own shop, make your shop bigger. You can sell more. You have sale tables.
How much of it is playing in the dungeon and fighting things, and how much is selling?
I would say the majority is playing and fighting in the dungeon.
Oh, okay.
It's because what happens is in the beginning when you're like, oh, I don't know, blah, blah. Right now I've been running the same dungeon over and over again. So I know what I'm getting and I know what I'm grinding out towards. So when I come back out, there's all these quick features. Like we're talking about modern game stuff where I can hover over and like quick move and it'll move it and put it on the table to sell at the price I had set it at before, whether it was popular or not.
That
sounds
cool.
So it's kind of like a split of gameplay.
Let it play if you want, Bear.
Like Battle Chef Brigade, where you would do these dungeon runs to get ingredients.
Yep.
Then you would do this like Iron Chef competition with the ingredients you got in your dungeon run.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, interesting. But obviously the art style is very different, and like there's no cooking. You're
totally. Yeah. But you're nailing it in terms of it's this like interesting mashup, right, of dungeon crawler, rogue, business simulator, doing all these different things, upgrading your town.
And it's my favorite type of 2D pixel art, too.
Yeah,
like, animations really are great. Cool. I bought it. I played like maybe an hour of it, but I think it was on a trip.
Yeah.
And then I never like picked it up again. But yeah, I enjoyed what I played for sure.
Yeah, I'm floored. Like, and it's one of those things that not even a lot, I guess, actually, because we're always usually ahead of the curve on console games
usually,
in particular, right? Where it's like we get to tell people what we think of games before they come out. Like, this, I thank Katie so much and the community for turning this on to me, because it is that thing of like, this is for sure my nonstop Switch game until it's over, because I'm just having such a good time with it. And it doesn't have... So many rogue games will put a time thing on you of like, oh, you got to fight this thing in this many days or whatever. And like, this just isn't that pressure. It's like I'm grinding out the same dungeon over and over again, and I'm getting to the point where, all right, cool, I need stuff that I know is in the other dungeon, but I'd rather upgrade my shop before I leave, so I'm just going to keep doing this to earn money. I'm going to keep doing this to move on.
It's cool. It's got like almost like a little Link to the Past kind of vibe. It's really...
Link to the Past. It's Bastion.
Yeah.
It's, what was the one?
It is very
flowy. The other rogue game that I like where you only fought bosses. You ran around with the little bow and arrow. Look at the chat. They'll tell you eventually.
Really cool.
Oh,
yeah,
God, I know what you're talking about.
I'm down for this.
Titan something? Yes, Titan.
Titan Souls.
Titan Souls.
There you go.
There you go. Good one.
Yeah, I'm going to be flying the Guardian concert.
Totally
I'm
love it. Yeah, I totally recommend it. Like I said, I'm playing it on Switch. I came home and like I didn't even think about switching over to PS4 for trophies because, again, it's going to be something I want to have with me all the different places. But, again, Xbox Game Pass for free right now.
Oh, it's on Xbox Game Pass. Yep. That's really neat.
Came out in May last year and then came to Switch in November of last year. Man. So just totally slipped by. There's DLC apparently coming for it.
See, it's games like that as we sit here talking about our mood and where we play it and should we play mobile, that is where I think Stadia and xCloud eventually are going to be fitting in. Like, if this is on Games Pass and it's on xCloud and I can just... If I can somehow still play it on the plane, though, that's...
You won't be able to play it on a plane.
Well, we'll have to figure that part out. But if I can,
Joey,
it ticks so many boxes that it's on Games Pass. I can just do it. But I'll be getting this for Switch, obviously.
You bring up Stadia xCloud. You wanted to talk about this. You played Stadia at E3?
We didn't have a chance to talk about it. So
because Tim runs a weird ship around here, where all he wants to do is go,
I love you.
And walk away.
I love you guys. you weren't on the show last week, right? Or...
I was.
No, you were. We just didn't get to talk about it. We talked about everything. So many things
like
that
Bane.
We played.
I was.
So anyway, the short of it was, what did you say in your tweets? If you could recap what your experience was. That's all I know that you know about Stadia. You played it and you like, what was your first reaction? Roughly speaking.
My reaction?
Yeah.
I thought it was great. I played Doom Eternal. Again, I played off of a Chromebook running an Ethernet line into it, HDMI to the TV, Stadia controller. Yeah, I'm sure.
Okay, so say that one more time. You played off of a Chromebook running an Ethernet line.
Yep. So it was an Ethernet to the Chromebook.
So you were hardwired.
Hardwired Correct. Connection.
Yeah, exactly.
Convenient.
Well, sure. It's not a full test, but whatever. 25 megabits per second. Yeah. I was in the same room. I believe it was the 1080p.
Did you guys
sort
do like a speakeasy test?
No, a speed test.net, you mean? No, I mean, look, I'm gonna trust PR when they told me, and I talked to one
of
the...
This is where your falling is, friend. You trusted PR to tell you how fast the internet
was. We also know the PR guy. We've known for many years. He's
Patrick
Seymour
pulling a fast one on us.
Patrick's not gonna lie. Anyway, yes, the setup was exactly that. Doom Eternal, 1080p. It was on a 30-some-inch, maybe 40-inch television, though.
I think 40,
So the Chromebook was connected to a...
HDMI.
HDMI cable? Yeah.
Okay. So that's the thing. You were actually playing on a full-size TV, and then we had a Stadia controller, so you got to play that as well. So yeah, you walked out, and so you were like...
For me, it totally reinforced everything that I want that thing to be, and I was like, I bought a Founders package after that, a press conference, and I was like, I know I'm doing this on blind faith. I'm doing all this. I walked out of that, and I was
like, I'm in.
This just justified that purchase of... I don't know if it's going to be the end all be all, if it's going to take off, it's going to do it, but I am in for the ride of that.
But it works.
I am in for the ride of that.
Tell me about the controller.
Yeah, how did you like the controller?
Wait, can we come back to the controller? Because
sure.
I want to...
Okay, sure. Stick on the... We'll put a pin in it.
The easy answer is the controller's totally solid. It's based on Xbox, I think, and it feels sort of normal. It's kind of got the PlayStation stick layout, though, right? Well, let's come back to the controller. So I want to ask you, you're playing Doom Eternal on this.
That's right.
Did you want to play Doom Eternal on this? Was that sort of where you are? You're just like, wait, it works. And so whatever comes this way, you're in. You know what I mean?
Well, this is how I think we talked about my Doom thing last week, right? Where this
where are you going
to
play
this? The key to it was that, I see what you're saying.
If you have it now and they all come out, let's say, at the same time, when you say to me, you're like, I'm totally in. I'm just wondering, what does that mean? Does that mean that you actually own two versions, but you're going to play it on the road sometimes, and you assume it as crossover? Like, what is it?
For me,
that's getting in the
weeds.
For
me, it totally comes down to that's a TBD. Shake the magic eight ball and can't tell you because I don't have all the information.
Yeah.
I need to see what it runs like on my house Wi-Fi, what it runs like on hotel Wi-Fi, and see if it's
you still want to see if Stadia works outside the test environment.
Sure.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up a single-player experience. I mean, obviously, Doom has multiplayer, but... They've already said that they don't know what the cross-play situation and cross-save situation is going to be with Stadia when it launches because they don't have those deals worked out with the other platform makers. And so I think it's going to be nice to have an option, especially for people like you and I, Fran, that play a lot of Destiny, that has a cloud-saving system. Mm-hmm. So I could play it at home on my PS4, and then if I'm on the road, if I don't have to bring my PS4 and my game screen and all of that, all the cables and everything that go along with that, if I can just bring my iPad and play Stadia with my, you know, DualShock or whatever.
Mood, place,
right?
That sounds so
great. No, it does, doesn't it? That's like the promise of what Stadia can do. However, we don't know if I'm going to have to buy a license for Shadowkeep or whatever the next thing for Destiny is on PlayStation and on Stadia.
Yeah, no, you do.
Right?
Now, or you get it with your Founders Pass, so you don't have to worry about it. Sorry, your first month of Pro, Stadia Pro, you get Shadowkeep. So technically you own two versions, but you're set because now you have your main version and that version. But the point is it'll work on that. Other games, and that's where I'm going with this, is what do you want Stadia for? Are you thinking of playing in your living room? Sounds like you're saying, for starters, you just got to see if it works at home.
100%. Let's say, I've talked about this on the Gamescast me and Tim did at E3 where we were drinking beers and hanging out. But if Stadia, and I know this won't happen, so don't bother even throwing hot coals at me. But if Stadia works the way it worked when we used it and on the road works comparable, maybe there's a degrade in visual quality, but I'm still not feeling latent. You know what I mean? Because Doom felt like Doom.
I was very surprised.
Doom on Stadia felt like Doom when we played it at Judge's Week on a whatever fancy ass PC we were playing with, but with a controller. If that is the same way, then it will be a long, hard conversation. It will suddenly become a, am I going to platinum this game? No, then probably go through Stadia.
Because you might want to play it on the road.
100%. I'm on the road so much. Exactly. I do so many things that, it just makes more sense that if I talk about, man, I wish there was something on Switch. I say that because I'm on the road so much, I have my Switch with me and it's easy. Yeah. When I go, it's easy when we're at Jen's parents' house in the country that, cool, we're going to go downstairs and, for 45 minutes or whatever, she's playing Stardew and I'm playing Yamada right before bed. It's like, that's so much easier than, cool, we're going to go downstairs. And the first 5 minutes is me breaking out the PS4, unwinding the cable, plugging in. What's your Wi-Fi? This.
What a hassle.
And it's not even that. It's like such a first world problem hassle.
Yeah.
But it's so much easier.
It's annoying.
If it was.
There's times where I'm just like, I'll just leave it in the bag. I really don't want to unpack it right now.
And that's the thing. To what we're talking about, if it's just turn on the iPad, turn on the controller, and I'm playing a game, and this is the kind of funny motto when we talk about all this, that's good enough.
Yeah.
If it's good enough, then like playing Doom Eternal,
good enough.
Oh yeah, but I was like, oh yeah, I'm not even that guy. You kind of are that guy. I was like, the colors look a little bit more washed out than I remember them on PC.
Well, games are gonna always be better on certain platforms, 100%. Right?
But that's... I don't give a shit. I would have played it there, right?
Perfect segue. So I played it. I also played XCloud, by the way. I don't know if you guys had the chance.
Yeah.
But I went in with a very critical eye, too, because I'm the video guy. And also, if I take a photo, right, I'm zooming in. It takes me like 7 years to release a single photo because I'm like all the detail. Right. So to be fair, I'm trying to set myself up. I am a snob when it comes to fidelity of stuff. But that's one thing that I really enjoy. And that is why I've been very bought in still to the idea that I probably will have, the PS5 and the next Xbox and be really all in on that, hooked up to either, my PC screens or my my home 4K screen. And all about the fidelity, because the difference between direct output versus what's going on with Stadia, and that was the biggest thing I wanted to see. I describe it as you're playing YouTube, right? You're selecting the 1080p or you're selecting 4K. Like, that is the experience you're getting, quote unquote, because it's, it sends this direct signal and it comes back to you after being compressed as a video signal. And that's and it's Google making it. Trust me, it's not that far off of probably what YouTube does for its encoding. Long story short, when you just brought up, you're like, it looked a little more washed out. Man, I saw a lot more than that going on. I also, to be fair, I went in looking for it. Yeah. I had just played Doom Eternal on PC at the Bethesda event, the day before. So I had a very good point of reference. Where I'm going with this is, yes, it's good enough. And the input latency, let's just address that. I was surprised. I was as surprised as you. I was like testing. I was like, is it working right? I was like, wow, it's pretty close. I'd have to get into a multiplayer match, I think. But I felt like I could aim at the enemies. I didn't feel like, I was really searching for the feeling of bad latency and input. I was surprised, it didn't have that.
I think we're in a situation now, hearing you guys talk about it, where if Stadia can beat out Switch, there's really no reason why you would ever want to play a third-party game on Switch over Stadia. Because as we've seen I've yet to see a third party AAA release Switch that hasn't had some kind of resolution dip, frame rate dips, latency issues, some kind of technical downgrade to play it on Switch. And Switch is, what, double the price of Stadia right now?
True, but I was going to say, Andrew, we always do this. How are you going to play it on the bus, the airplane, at the park? What is your plan? See what I'm saying? Like, if you have an LTE on your phone, that'll work at the park, I guess. Hopefully you get a good, but you need 25 megabits per second for 1080p.
No, I'm with you.
I was just bringing that up.
Totally. That would be the thing.
The Switch is my plane machine, right? Yeah. Like, when I'm not, because I can barely do Gmail on plane Wi-Fi.
Let alone the promise of doing Stadia
is like not happening, right?
See, I'm right there with you in the fact that I think in that world, it would just be the fact that my consoles are coming with me, but it's just Stadia. Yeah. Where I think, like, still think of the Switch would be the indie machine. It probably would be where I still play Moonlighter because, all right, cool, I want to be able to just play it anywhere on the bus, on the Muni or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, like, when I'm thinking of my Stadia experiences in a perfect world that I know won't happen, it is that, cool, oh, man, kick up my heels in bed in between a shoot on a set before, you know, hurry up and wait before we film this thing. I boot up and I go run a couple things in Division. Again, Dream World's not happening.
Hey, thanks, Joey.
Yep. So anyway, yeah, I think that is what's going to get a lot of us is like, wait, should I get it on Switch because I'm not going to have a connection? Or maybe I'm going to, I'll just get Stadia because I think I'm going to have a connection most of the time. It's going to be interesting to go through that. But just to finish where I was going with it is, the gameplay was working fine on this 1080p recommended 25 megabits per second. Fidelity-wise, though, it is very much a 1080p video encoded frame, and man, it just hit me in the face like a truck. And for me, I felt like I was playing an Xbox, 360 game almost. Wow. That's an exaggeration. You played the same thing. You didn't feel like that, right?
No.
But
I knew something was different. I'm just not that guy, but I knew something was different.
It's washier. You're going to get a desaturated look from video compression. You're also going to get some artifacting.
The black levels are always like raised up a little bit for whatever reason.
It's all over the place. I mean, the truth is, if and when, I should say, we see this side by side, I think you will be surprised at how different the fidelity looks. And also it brings in a question, what is the fidelity I'm even playing at? People in their mind's eye, and maybe where you're going, are still like, oh man, it's going to be like a 2080 Ti highest end graphics card.
Oh no, anything that's coming over an internet connection is always going to be less than something that's native on a disc or even that's downloaded as a piece of software on your system. Yeah,
that's what's being sent back to you, so it's degraded coming back to you. But my point is, in the cloud, I don't know if we got hardware specs yet.
I think in the cloud, they kept on sort of showing off and saying that you are going to be playing these games at the highest settings possible in 4K.
Did they say highest settings possible?
I mean, that's all
on
the vibes
Stadia,
that I got.
Whatever
like,
that means.
They kept on
But is it a 980? Is it a 1080? Is it 2080? You see what I'm getting at? Like,
well, they said that
I think it's going to be a game that you could play at. I think it's like the equivalent of playing a PC game on high settings.
At launch, Google Stadia will use a custom 2.5 gigahertz hyper-threaded X86 CPU with AVX2 SIMD, a custom AMD GPU capable of 10.7 teraflops, 16 gigabytes of RAM with up to 484 gigabytes per second transfer speeds.
I'd have to look at that bandwidth and compare it to like the cards out there. That's
just admit you don't know what a PC is.
This really only matters for a small subset of gamers, to be frank. You know, the people that are very into their TV settings and...
No, it's way... it's a huge difference where I was going with this.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying, though, is that, like, I think, though, that the people who are going to be bought into Stadia at launch are not those people. Those people are going to continue to play on their PC where they have been playing.
100%.
Yeah.
Yes.
I agree with that.
But I'm just two things. One, we need to see 4K, because if you can do 4K HDR or whatever in your home, that was like
that's the founder stuff, right?
35 megabits per second minimum,
megabits.
Right?
So I'm curious to see how that encoding looks, and maybe if you can even play 1080p in that. But I'm the video guy. I'm not being even overly critical. There's a big difference in the...
Oh, I am. I've been the most critical.
But my point is... when I say, yes, I nitpick over video fidelity, yes, I do. But it's also a huge difference from just playing, say, your Switch at 720p. You will get a very degraded... Okay, very is an exaggeration. I've only played one game, but I noticed is the point. That is my biggest concern if you're going in to buy Stadia. I'll put it in two categories. I have buyer be excited and buyer beware. The buyer be excited is what Greg talked about. Like, wow, it works. Oh my God, suddenly I can probably just play this in like a decent hotel. Like, we'll see where that goes and have the convenience to like play wherever you want. And it's it's stuff like Division, you know, to just be able to pop that open without bringing your PS4 with you. I mean, that's amazing. Or for me on the road, I'm super excited to have a copy of Destiny 2 Shadowkeep and be like, I can just log on and play a strike and not, like, I don't have to bring it with. It's amazing. The buyer beware side is, I think you'll be surprised with the fidelity at 1080p currently. We'll see if that improves over time, and I want to see where 4K goes.
I think those are the same. I don't think you can, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think you're both. I'm both. Where I'm super excited, and then as I keep saying here, it's probably not going to be that way. Like, I'm aware of what I've seen.
At least not at launch.
Exactly.
I think they'll get there.
Yeah,
right?
I hope so, right?
You know, but I think, like, when this thing goes live, it's going to have a ton of problems.
Sure. Fran, what did you think of the controller? We're taking the pin out of it.
Yeah, yeah. So, actually, I was really impressed with the controller. It felt natural. It didn't, at any point, it didn't really stand out to me. It was funny. The Doom controls, like, were kind of like, I had to claw grip a few times, but I'm pretty used to it at this point.
Mouse and keyboard door.
The controller felt totally fine to me. It felt inspired by both the Xbox and PlayStation.
What I was surprised about when I played it is I liked it a lot. I'm a big fan. When I picked it up, it felt super light, almost to 6 access
level.
Maybe
too light.
Where I was like, oh, wait a second. And then when I started playing with it and the rumble, and I was like, oh, okay, it's fine.
Yeah, it went away. I didn't think about it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Can you, though, use your Xbox One or DualShock 4 controller now?
Yes.
So why even bother?
Oh, well, yeah.
Exactly.
With your founder's pack, right? It comes regardless. I got one coming.
Exactly. So, the controller's solid.
You know, the Stadia controller has, like, those special sort of Google buttons or whatever.
The Google connected thing.
You'll never use that stuff, but the controller was good. In other words, like, if you don't have to buy it, I wouldn't, because if you already have an Xbox, you know, controller or whatever, then you're fine. But if you are getting, you shouldn't be concerned. You know, and I think that's the good news. Mm-hmm. But my last thing I was just going to say on it was when I looked at Moonlight, assuming I could play it wherever I want, that's the type of game that I think you're not going to have to worry about fidelity as much.
Oh, no, yeah, no.
Stuff with lower frame, because this was running at 60 frames, and, like, that's another thing. Like, I haven't played a game at 30 frames a second on this, and so the encoding is going to be twice as good, and, like, maybe 30-frame games are a really good sweet spot, and you're like, wow, like, it looks pretty much as good as Switch, and we don't know that yet, but that's where I'm excited to see where that stuff goes.
Yeah, I can't wait.
It has high potential.
Yeah, I want to get my hands on it in the real world and see what it's all about.
Yeah.
Fran, Andrea, I need, of course, your Destiny expertise because I have a question from the Legend of Kanto, along with a couple other ones. But first, let's talk about our sponsor. This episode of the Kinda Funny Games cast is brought to you by Upstart. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy, getting out is hard, especially if your FICO score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just a credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high interest credit card debt. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, I've talked about it before. When I moved out here, when I got divorced, when I had to move to a different place, I had to take out a loan. I was in a huge thing of debt. It was a pain in the ass, not to mention the credit cards I already had. I wish this existed. Upstart goes beyond the traditional FICO score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. Upstart believes you're more than a credit score. They believe in you, and they understand that. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check the rate in just a few minutes without affecting your credit score. The best part? Once the loan is approved, most people get their funds the very next business day. The next day, people! Over 200,000 people have used Upstart.com to pay off credit cards, student loans, fund their wedding, and make large purchases. Free yourself of the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/kindoffunny to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate takes only a few minutes and won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/kindoffunny. We're also brought to you by Zebit. No one likes zero anything. Like when you break your phone and lose your contact to the outside world. Zero calls, zero text, zero social media. Honestly, life without a phone means pretty much zero everything. Having zero of anything is hardly ever a good thing unless we're talking about Zebit. That's Zebit. They'll change the way your whole perspective is on zero forever. Let me tell you, you like zero interest? You like being able to finance stuff? I just talked about being in trouble with debt before, right? This is the exact same situation. This is a better credit option. Zebit provides a better credit option for those who need it. They allow you to buy what you need and pay over time interest-free. With Zebit, there's no cost to join, no membership fees, and no late fees. It doesn't even check your credit score. Zebit is your thing to get zero impact on your credit score and doesn't affect anything else. You're just zebbing it up, having a good time. It's got a huge marketplace. Zebit has everyday items at everyday prices. They have more than 50,000 products in their marketplace with brand names like Xbox, Sony, Apple, GoPro, and Fitbit. From electronics to barbecues, furniture, and more, Zebit has everything you need when you need it. Zebit also has a 5-star rating on Trustpilot, and they've earned the trust of more than 1 million customers who shop on Zebit. Sign up for Zebit today at zebit.com/kinda and get $2,500 credit to the shop, the Zebit Marketplace, at zero interest and zero cost to join. That's ZEBIT.com/kinda for up to $2,500 of interest-free credit. Zebit.com/kinda.
Before you get to that, did you see that I added a game that I've been playing?
No.
That maybe you guys
printed this after
talked
fact.
About? Cadence of Hyrule? Have you guys talked about that yet?
No. Awesome. I think Tim Getty was getting ready to get into
play
it.
That as well.
Yeah, so I just wanted to chat about this quickly before we get into more Destiny talk because I thought people would be interested.
Well, it's more of a question. Don't worry.
So the Cadence of Hyrule is a game that's built on Crypt of the NecroDancer with a Legend of Zelda skin on it. So essentially it's the gameplay that you know from Crypt of the NecroDancer. If you played it, a roguelike top-down retro art style game where you move in a grid and you have to move to the beat. And all the enemies are synced to the rhythm of the music and their attacks are all beat-based. So it's a really cool concept. And then Cadence of Hyrule has you play either as Cadence, Link, or Zelda. And the idea, again, is it's top-down. So very, like, classic Zelda, like Link to the Past, where you have like, bombable walls and secrets to find and a lot of the classic Zelda items that you'll recognize if you're a longtime Zelda fan. The music in this game is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
it's like
I've
a nice electro/rock mixes of really classic Zelda music. And it's a lot of old sprites and characters that you'll recognize from early in the Legend of Zelda franchise. As somebody who is not a super fan of old Legend of Zelda and really only got into this franchise with Breath of the Wild, I didn't get my skirt blown up that much by it, but Brittany Brombacher is in love with this game. I thought that I would be more
Shocker.
Into it because
I was going to say, what games doesn't Brittany love?
Well, there's actually quite a few. She never played Horizon Zero Dawn like
She's
a monster.
She's an idiot.
So I thought because it's a rhythm-based game, I love music and rhythm games. Rhythm genre games are right in my wheelhouse, so I absolutely needed to try this. And the music is fantastic, but I was just really struggling with getting a rhythm to the beats.
Dude, that's why I started Crypt of the NecroDancer. And I was like, it looked awesome, great. I got in there and I'm like, I'm so rhythmically challenged that I just don't enjoy this.
Yeah.
And I had to stop.
So thankfully, the developers of this game put in a mode where you can turn off the beat matching for your character movement. But the enemies... attacks are still beat-based, and so you still need to be aware of the music. They have like a little metronome-style thing at the bottom of the screen so you can visually see it as well, and you do a calibration before you begin to see like where your visual TV and audio system is set up.
I would love to see Kevin try this. He's the most rhythmically challenged human being in the world.
This is a game built to destroy him.
Yeah, so essentially like you move using the D-pad, and somebody in the Reddit for this game actually recommended mapping the buttons for movement to the buttons.
Sure.
Instead of the D-pad.
Tap,
so down, you're tapping down, like down. Up, left, down, right
like
to the
that.
Beat.
Yeah.
So it's easier because I started off using the sticks because I tried it on my pro controller and the game was like, hey, we see you're using the left thumbstick. You probably shouldn't do that. You're going to find it really difficult to move. But the enemies are really unique in the sense that they all are beat-based, and so they have certain tells for about when they're going to attack. Like this one enemy will raise its arms before it attacks. One like squints. One does this, like raises its weapon.
And you're dodging on beat?
You're dodging on beat. Yep. You're attacking on beat. Everything is beat-based. And each different tile that you're in, as you know, Legend of Zelda style, you're moving through and you see these different tiles of the map open. The music will change depending on what enemies are around. And if you clear all the enemies from a tile, the music slows down. You can move around freely. But you can also, like I said, just turn that movement beat matching off altogether and move around freely. But again, the enemies are still going to move. And the enemies only move when you move. And so it really is this choreographed dance of sorts to be able to attack and clear the enemies. They have dungeons in the game, which is kind of neat. They're obviously much smaller than your traditional Zelda dungeons are. But I wanted to bring it up because I thought it was a really neat style. And more importantly, I think it's a fantastic example of Nintendo working with an independent developer to take one of their most well-known and beloved franchises and really trusting, trusting the team to do something really inventive with it. And so if you liked Crypt of the NecroDancer at all, or if you are interested in like classic Zelda top-down exploration gameplay with this really cool beat mechanic, definitely worth checking out Cadence of Hyrule.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
Good. Good job, Andrew.
Yeah.
Sorry, I missed it on the notes.
That's all right.
So like I said, I got a Destiny question for you guys.
Oh,
yeah. You guys ready for it?
Yes, ready.
There's other questions, too, so don't turn it off if you hate Destiny. Legend of Kanto writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, my question today pertains to Destiny 2, more specifically its evolution now that Bungie is independent from Activision. As more hardcore Destiny players, Fran and Andrea, where would you like to see the franchise focus? Would you guys prefer more focus on the story, endgame, PvP, customization, etc.? Also, would love to know, as more peripheral fans that Andy and Greg are, what their viewpoints are on the matter. And if at this point there's anything they could do to get you guys back in. You guys were talking earlier, right? You're doing something.
Us back in?
No, me and Andy to get us back in because we haven't played. What you guys want going on. But then even right now, you were just talking about something today.
Yeah, well, I was playing the heroic version.
The Menagerie? And
Menagerie.
Well, what the hell's that?
Menagerie is their six-person matchmade activity. So it's other than the raid, there's, well, in PvP, there's no six-person activities. You can just hop in and shoot stuff and like have a ton of fun. And they did
that
this,
are PvE-based.
Yeah, gotcha, PvE. Gotcha, PvP. Yeah.
It's just, you got to know banana outfit.
I'm like, I know, it's hard for you to see.
It's hard to take
you seriously. Yes, here's a very serious point on my top.
My banana hat is falling off. But yeah, because six-player matchmaking is currently available in the Crucible, so.
Exactly. So non-PvP, it's one of the things. You just go and shoot stuff with a bunch of other people. It's super chaotic, and it's actually a lot of fun. Plus, you can grind out your weapons. But they released a heroic mode of it, which you do have to find people to go in because it's so difficult. They don't want you to be
because they're
off.
Essentially bringing in raid puzzle-like mechanics into the Menagerie, but in a much smaller scale.
Yeah.
So that you can do it in a much shorter time frame because, as Greg knows, sometimes raids take a very long time.
But it's a very short review of Heroic Menagerie. It was definitely difficult, but I was blessed to play with a very good team that I played with the Destiny Community Podcast team, and they're really good. So we blew through it the first time, and actually, I felt like 75% of it, the way that it works, was almost felt similar because
But you guys are also all max light level.
Very powerful. Yeah, it's for reference point, by the way, you are capped at 750 power right now, but as you go towards the end of this mode, it's 770, and that 20 light scale, it hits you like a truck, so you got to be super careful, which is a lot what they do with the raids on day one. Anyway, it was a lot of fun, but the last boss, they make it such a bullet sponge. That's how they turned it into the heroic activity. Mm. And frankly, the rewards that you can get like a sword from it. You also get a catalyst out of doing it and something else I'm forgetting. It's called masterworking your weapons. You can masterwork your drop that you get once a week. However, it's not curated. I know I'm getting in the weeds, guys, but like what you want is an awesome, perfect roll, right? But you're not guaranteed that. It's just it might drop as a masterwork, which really you can spend money on anyway, and it's not
sure.
A big deal.
Sure. Since they changed the masterwork system, and I have yet to have anything drop masterworked already.
Yeah.
I have not bothered masterworking anything.
Yeah, well,
it's way too expensive.
Core
you're constantly getting new gear. The refresh of gear just is constant. And so, like, why spend the resources to masterwork an item? And then you have to constantly infuse it. And then that costs even more money.
It's an economy problem. I have a huge problem with it, which is a different rant.
But to answer the question.
Yeah, back to the question.
I was just going to throw it back to her, actually. Yeah.
I think what I personally would love from Destiny is more story-based content.
Mm.
We've got the grinding. We've got the PvE. We've got the PvP. We've got, you know, raids and endgame content. What we still are lacking is really meaningful narrative-based missions that are story-based that really enhance the world of Destiny that are in the game, so I'm not having to chase a piece of lore here, a piece of lore here, a piece of lore here, and then having to piece it together in menus.
Sure.
It's being played out in cutscenes or with voiceover from these characters that we've come to love over the many years of Destiny. I really crave that experience, and that's why I really enjoy doing the heroic story missions every week, because it brings me back to something that I think Bungie does really well, which is make these really fantastic story missions that have meaningful bits of lore, but they just always felt so disjointed and not really connected. Like, it's never had like a true campaign, right? Like, even when Forsaken launched, and everything was going down with like Kate or whatever, it's just like, it still is like, okay, you got to go here and then back to the tower. And then you got to go here and you got to go talk to this vendor. You know, it doesn't feel like you're setting up and then you can like sit down and play the story for like 3 or 4 hours at a time.
Yeah.
It's like you're playing it for like 20 minutes at a time instead.
I mean, that's what Anthem suffered from. I think that's really hard to pull off, but I know what you mean. Like it would be great to get, I would say they
could just. Even if it was like a standalone expansion set in the universe of Destiny, like we're gonna make a first person shooter standalone expansion in the world of Destiny that doesn't have any of this other open world stuff in it, that just is like a short experience, like a Lost Legacy kind of a thing.
Sure.
Where you don't have to worry about going to the tower and picking up bounties and all the bullshit that we love to do in Destiny. I would think that would be fantastic.
That'd be really cool.
But
that'd be
awesome. It's a very different topic, but definitely
that would get me back
story,
in to answer his question.
And to be able to play it co-op, a single player experience that you, if you wanted to, you could play it with a fire team.
And that's the thing for Kansas' question, like what would get me back in? I can't speak for Andy, but like when Luke and the team did the stream, right? That was like, hey, here's our coming out party. We're independent. Here's where Destiny's going, all this stuff. I was so impressed with them and the way they handled it and what they were talking about and the expansions and the cross save and all that jazz. And I'm like, I tweeted, right? Of like, am I about to play Destiny again? Yeah. Like, that sounds like fun. And the way they were talking about the new stuff that you'll be able to jump on and go, that seems like a great time. And you guys can play with me and I don't feel like I'm holding you back, but you can bring me forward. The problem I have with Destiny having, you know, lapsed since what I platinumed it December right after it launched.
Probably, yeah.
So 2017. Almost 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't even know what the hell's going on. Like, to turn that back, it's like DC Universe Online. When I turn it back on, I'm like, I have no idea what I should be doing. Right.
So
like,
that...
No, go ahead.
That's what they're trying to fix with Shadowkeep, like you said.
Yeah.
We don't know the exacts, but we know a lot. And it does sound like you can hop in, you can skip a bunch of this story stuff, or go back and play it as long as you purchased it. But that is definitely one of the gaps. Like, if you go in now, it's like, wait, what do I have to play? Okay, I got to go here. And what do I have to buy to get this thing? And it takes a lot of research or just asking your friends. And I think if they can effectively remove that barrier, you might be in, right? Because ideally what happens is you come back to Destiny, you buy Shadowkeep in addition to the free version. Maybe you didn't play this other stuff and you didn't buy it. But you're like, I just got Shadowkeep, fine. So then you're all in on that and you can just start getting into the story, and also your light level will be appropriate, and they've got a fix for that too.
Because they'll auto-level you,
Seemingly, you know, they got these power surge systems as part of the quest where it just bumps you up. But the problem is right now to do those, you actually have to still play the story content from before. Mm-hmm. Like I just ran into it with my third character on my Titan who's not totally leveled, and I went to grab thinking my power surge bounty and I like logged on and then I was like, wait, where are my drops? Because what happens is you do it on one character and it drops the gear for you on all characters.
Stuff, yeah.
So I was looking, I was like, what is going on? And then I was looking, I was like, oh, I didn't play Forsaken on this character yet. But I literally would have to spend like 4 to 6 hours doing that just to play the character in the character. So that's the type of stuff that I think if they can fix, they're going to fix it for you guys as you can just hop in.
Andy, what would bring you back? Anything?
I mean, I plan on coming back for Shadowkeep. Only because whenever there's a... I feel like I always come back to Destiny whenever there's sort of this big refresh. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, Destiny 1 came out. I was all in on Destiny 1. I played the shit out of it, even though it was, like, really, really grindy. I don't play... I think I play a lot of Destiny, like, when it comes out. And then when Destiny 2 comes out. And then when Forsaken comes out. But then I'm still not able to tell when Destiny is bad or good. You know what I mean? Like, I always enjoyed it while I'm playing it, but then there's always, I hear from the community that, like, it's fucked up right now. This and to me, it's just like, I'm just playing it, I guess. Like,
if you're having fun, it's never bad, Andy.
Exactly. That's my, so I feel like I come back to Destiny whenever there's a giant sort of refresh, when they're kind of saying, all right, guys, you could start here. This is a great time to jump back into Destiny. Mm-hmm. Whenever that big refresh happens, that's when I feel like I am a lot more I don't know, a lot more willing to jump back in.
Yep. Yeah, and I know we're short on time, so to answer the question, one was, I agree with Andrea, they could do better with the story. Everybody wants that, knows that we want more cinematics, absolutely. But the biggest stuff for me, they've been doing a little bit of, which is dropping content, like we saw with Forsaken, but they dropped just amazing new strikes and like story based content, worlds to play in, basically. And then they had these things called the Senate Challenges. They were a way to, like, it was the black and white world, so to speak, where you hopped in and did these challenges that weren't just gunning down people. They had puzzle elements to them, so they added that to the game. Like I said, they added the six-person activity. They now have these layers to play with that they're getting pretty good with, I'd say, as well as you want new weapon drops and all this other stuff and a new story to play. But that's, they just need to keep on that path and have enough of it, because is when you're a ravenous Destiny player, it's never enough. You burn through the first part, and then what happens is you sink to the grind. That's, Andy, where everybody starts complaining about all these little things that bother them. And some people are like, wait, I just played for 15 hours.
It also just seemed like I never played when the off expansions were going on, like when you know, I know that the
what Curse was of Osiris, yeah, was a all disaster. That stuff.
Like a lot of those expansions, I wasn't playing at the time, so right. I feel like I never experienced Destiny at its worst. I don't want to say worst, but like,
Curse of Osiris is pretty much Destiny 2 at its worst.
At the time that a lot of the hardcore of the hardcore were like, yeah, this is not very good. I was never in at those moments, so I can never really, be a judge of that.
Well, if it's any consolation, it's the best it's been so far now. And it won Best Ongoing Game at the GCAs, which I was really impressed with.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to Shadowkeep. If it has as much content as Forsaken, the raid was amazing, Forsaken, all the stuff is amazing. So they just need to take some of these layers they already have. And to finish the point I was going to say, I would like to see a little more, like, a strike every quarter, a new one, and a new PvP map has been a big issue. And then also bring back Trials of Osiris. It's a super highly competitive 3v3 mode. Well, they turned it to 4v4, and it just got all broken. But if they can add all that back in, but give you a little more content quarterly, they're still doing pretty good, but they've had some hit or miss with this last year. But they're on a really good track.
I want to retract my statement. I didn't play a whole lot of Forsaken. I'm just remembering that now. Like, okay.
Maybe you played Destiny 2 most.
Bastard.
I played enough to play Gambit.
Yeah.
So was Gambit
that
in
was
Forsaken?
Just recently. Yeah, that was part of the season.
No, you're
pass.
Thinking about Gambit Prime, Fran.
Oh, he's talking about regular Gambit from Forsaken,
Gambit.
Right?
Regular old Gambit was.
So you did play that.
Yeah, so I played a decent amount of Forsaken, but not September. As much as just straight up 2. When Destiny 2 came out or Destiny 1 came out, that's where I sunk in a lot of hours.
Yeah, it has changed so dramatically. So it is in a really good spot, and I'm excited about Shadowkeep.
You're almost there, Andrea. The show's almost over.
Your hat keeps falling off.
You guys, I'm so sweaty underneath this banana suit. I
the
can't
final question is from JDob84. And requires you all to clear your mind.
Sub Dob.
Everyone will get one pick. We will start with Andrea, end with me, and then end this game's cast. JDob84 says, video game Mount Rushmore. With a greater emphasis these days on elevating gaming personality, such as creators, producers, studio heads, etc., it makes me wonder who you would put on video game Mount Rushmore. Then he does a whole bunch of things that I'm not going to put in your head.
Jesus. Can we answer this next week?
Yeah, oh my God.
Nice. Clear your head. Clear your head. Andrea, you're the first one. Slam dunk. Give me a slam of jam. Who would you put on the...
Mount Rushmore of video games?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
This is so hard.
It's a clear your mind exercise. Just shout it out. What are you saying?
I mean, there's one like off...
But you are chiseling faces into the side of
your
a mouth
away from you.
Oh, sorry. I think Miyamoto-san has
nailed
to go on
it.
There for
nailed
sure.
It. There you go.
Like,
yeah,
he's the first person that came to mind.
Obviously.
Only developers. Picking one?
Yeah. We're just putting a face on the,
yeah.
the thing.
Okay, good. So I got the first one.
That's what I'm saying. Reach to one. Reach to one.
I thought we had to do all four.
Okay.
I'm so not ready at all. Miyamoto was the easy one. Man,
sure.
You lucked out.
Fair.
I'll go second. Kojima.
Okay.
There you go. Another easy one. That's an easy one. Yeah.
Don't pick another Japanese male for the love of God.
I know, right? Give me a second.
Thinking
of like all these like super iconic games.
I know it's
like,
a big deal. I mean,
it is
a big
deal.
Yeah,
like design, and I know that it's kind
if
of. Just
you,
a joke
if you want
episode.
At all, J. Dobb, he leaned way more.
That's
modern.
One.
He leaned more modern. Mm-hmm. But I don't agree with the modern because we're not putting
Ken Levine.
No, what? Well, you could. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Ken is a genius. I don't think he belongs on the Mount Rushmore.
That's rude to him.
I can't. Okay. I literally can't do it. I would have put Miyamoto
on
there.
Only
Kojima,
like,
I can agree with.
I don't know
probably.
Why I immediately think of just like Koji Kondo, just because his music was
yeah, like
just such a
that's
huge
a good one
staple.
Too. Yeah.
I can't. I literally can't.
Like, you're just not going to play the game.
Because here's why. What no matter what you say and what we end up with, Greg, we will be like judged by these
people. Understand it's a clear your mind activity that we're throwing out.
They're clearing their minds. Like too,
first off, that you we're talked like about Destiny 15 minutes, they turned the podcast off.
Oh, I didn't say that. I think Bonnie would be an amazing.
Nobody's watching.
Like, there's so many other people.
Nobody's watching anymore.
You're just yelling at me.
You're just going to have to go. You got to pick two.
I was going
to
put, and I can never say it, but Alexei, the guy who made Tetris.
Yes,
Alexei Pajitnov. Thank you very much. That's right. Yeah, I can't pronounce right. But again, like that's one game, but it's Alexei. A pretty awesome game that went on forever and changed the world.
He absolutely deserves to be on it.
So J-Dob went on to say, Miyamoto and Kojima both seem like no-brainers, but who else would you put in those? There are some great personalities, such as Phil Spencer, Corey Barlog, Jade Raymond, etc., but just wondering which five people you would elevate to this fictional monument. I think it goes on well beyond that, right?
Yeah, I was looking back.
You can make cases for so many people, like Nolan Bushnell.
What I was going to say. I was looking back farther, like Nolan Bushnell and like all this stuff of past.
Iwata, right? Like, I mean, like the list goes on. Stuff then. And then, yeah, when do you want to bring in a more modern person?
If,
like, you
know, what I'd love
like an
to
Amy
do.
Hennig
yeah,
whatever,
you bring
yeah.
up Bonnie, yes. right? Kiki Wolfgang, Bonnie. Right?
But Bonnie's been making games for over 20 years.
Yeah. Bonnie's been, exactly.
She's
she was
timeless,
just inducted
though, you know?
in for
yeah,
DICE, right?
for the DICE Hall of Fame.
Absolutely amazing.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kind of Funny Gamescast number 227. Rest in peace, Tim Geddes, wherever they dumped your body. If you like this show, remember patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. You can get it early, ad-free, watch us record it live, watch us do pre- and post-shows. We're about to do a post-show, everybody, don't forget. Of course, you can check me out on Kind of Funny, Andy out on Gary Witta, Fran out on FM3_, Andrea on What's Good Games all over the interwebs. Until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.
Peanut butter jelly.